From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Bridget Dowd with your state and local news update. In 1962, an avalanche damaged more than 30 homes in the Barrens neighborhood near downtown Juneau. There have been decades of studies since then, and all of them agree the path above Barrens Avenue can generate slides capable of leveling the neighborhood, and that they should be expected every few decades. Just this winter, Juneau's emergency manager went door-to-door at those same houses, telling people to evacuate because he had just raised the avalanche danger there to extreme for the first time in his career. So why are there even houses in such a dangerous spot? KTOO's Jennifer Pemberton spoke with Ian Dixon, who has been researching this history.
So there's probably been avalanches in Juneau since, like, the beginning of time, or at least since there were mountains here, and certainly before there were people here. But where should we start this story?
When Juneau was strictly a mining town, avalanches were part of everyday life, to the point where the old flumes were built as cheaply as possible because they just expected they'd get taken out by avalanches now and then. But the first big avalanche that we know of on the Barrens Path was in 1890. And that one is still the largest known avalanche on that path. It ran all the way down to the water where the small boat harbor is now. And it left hundreds of tons of snow on what's now Glacier Avenue. So it was a huge, huge slide. And it was remarkable enough at the time that somebody went to the trouble of going out to photograph the aftermath, which in 1890 would have been a whole thing. But nobody knows where that photo is now, and that's a real loss for our knowledge of the avalanche history.
Maybe in our timeline, we skip ahead now to, like, when does Juneau decide it's a good idea to start building at the bottom of the avalanche path?
So the neighborhood that wound up in the avalanche path was just an extension of the Highlands neighborhood, which had been growing up for some time as Juneau grew. And then in the mid-late 1940s, just a few homes kind of creep out into the avalanche path. And then a really curious thing happens. In 1949, the school district wanted to put an elementary school down in the path about where the Breakwater Inn is now. And the city put its foot down. It said, this is a possible slide area. You can't build a school there. And the city prevailed. They didn't put a school there. And then just a few months later, the same city council, same people, voted unanimously to annex that same area to make it part of Juneau. And after that annexation in 1949, the neighborhood grows really quickly.
So for whatever reason, they decided not to put a school there, but maybe we don't know the full reason why they decided to put a neighborhood there, except that Juneau was growing, right?
Juneau was growing. The housing shortage was acute. And unfortunately, there isn't, I have not found much discussion about whether or not it was wise to put houses there or not.
But by the end of the 1950s, all the houses that were going to be there pretty much were there. And then in 1962, we have another very large avalanche in that area.
It was early in the morning, and most people were asleep. The wind had been blowing hard all night long. And all of a sudden, there was a huge blast of wind and people's roofs were coming off their houses. Big tree trunks that had been sheared off went through people's houses. People's had walls collapse, chimneys came apart. And this was not anywhere close to a worst case avalanche for the path. The main part of the avalanche, the dense snow part, actually stopped short of the neighborhood. And what had hit them was this very powerful blast of wind and powder. And after it happened, people still seem to think of it as a freak occurrence and use the phrase freak wind.
That, I think, scared some people or definitely created the need to figure out what the risk was there.
The city definitely took notice and thought, we should understand this situation better than we do right now. And it took a while to come out, but a study by an avalanche specialist named Keith Hart came out in 1967. What Hart found was that the avalanche path was capable of such large avalanches that the neighborhood could not be protected from worst case avalanches. The most recent study came out in 2011. It was done by a Swiss institute. So that study found that the only really practical way to mitigate the risk was to buy people out of their homes, essentially just to get rid of the neighborhood altogether.
That's a big ask. So what happened when the city kind of started to explore that idea of a buyout program?
Well, it didn't really go anywhere. They did hold a meeting. There was public participation. People asked questions about it. But when I spoke to State Senator Jesse Keel, who was on the assembly at the time, what he remembered was that they didn't ask staff to put any time into investigating it, that the problems around it just seemed too daunting and there wasn't enough interest.
I guess the one big change that came out of that 2011 study, I think a lot of people, at least here in Juneau, know that we have an urban avalanche forecaster now. Is that the biggest thing they've done?
I think that is the biggest thing that they've done for people who already live in the neighborhood, or people who might buy in the neighborhood in the future, because they face the same risks they always face. Their homes face the same risk they always faced. But because of these daily avalanche forecasts, there's a much better chance that people won't be in their homes if a worst case slide does happen.
Well, thank you for all of your research. I really appreciate the time that you've taken to sort of dig into this.
Thanks. It's fascinating, and I do plan to keep learning more about it.
That was KTOO's Ian Dixon talking to Jennifer Pemberton. Ian's story about the history of the Barrens neighborhood is up on our website, where you can read the complete history and see photos from the 1962 slide. And tune in this week for more reporting on the urban avalanche danger in Juneau. Tomorrow, KTOO's Jennifer Pemberton has the story of researchers trying to understand Juneau's avalanche history by looking at tree rings. There's been a lot of confusion around commercial boat registration this year. Many fishermen are unsure whether or not they still need to register their vessels with the Department of Motor Vehicles, which has been a requirement for a few years. But a new state house bill has put that on pause. As KDLG's Stephanie Maltrich reports, fishermen have one less thing to cross off the list.
Eric Hesselroff has fished in Naknek for almost 50 years. When he arrived this summer from Seattle, it was unclear whether he had to register his boat, the FV Abe, at the DMV. He called the King Salmon DMV to make an appointment and get some answers.
And they told me that I couldn't get one till the end of the month, the end of June here, which I'd be out on the fishing ground way before that. And they said they had appointments every 15 minutes, and there was people standing in line outside. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you know. But they didn't really tell me one way or the other whether they really actually knew if it was required or not.
So he called the Alaska Wildlife Troopers, who confirmed that they wouldn't enforce DMV registrations this year.
That was a relief for me, because that's just one more hassle for me to try to accomplish that and then have to worry about not being able to comply and what that would mean on the water if I didn't have my sticker on the boat. And so, yeah, it was kind of a dilemma and a lot of head scratching and confusion there amongst other fishermen that I've spoken to as well.
The pause in enforcement is a result of House Bill 28, Registration of Boats Exemption. The House Special Committee on Fisheries introduced the bill this year. It passed in the House in May and currently awaits Senate approval. Aaron Frenzel, a commander with Alaska Wildlife Troopers, confirmed that commercial fishermen can rest easy this summer.
We will refrain from issuing any citations to commercial vessels that are currently U.S. Coast Guard documented, but not DMV registered.
The Derelict Vessels Act passed in 2018 and required commercial vessels to register boats in three places: Coast Guard, Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and the DMV.
Fishermen came together and HB 28 was introduced to prevent that third additional registration requirement for them through the DMV.
The break in citations only applies to commercial fishing vessels. Recreation vessels are still required to register with the DMV. Fishermen like Hesselroff are relieved, saying the additional registration caused confusion and cost them money. House District 37 Representative Bryce Edgman supported House Bill 28.
What was made very clear to us in the legislature that this oversight in a bill that we had passed a couple of years ago was now trickling down to fishermen across the state, requiring them to get additional registration through DMVs around the state that are very challenged. And it was something that essentially was sort of an easy fix that we all could agree on.
Edgman says he's confident the bill will pass the Senate next session. In Dillingham, I'm Stephanie Maltrich.